Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this podcast, I speak to birth mum Sammy. She shares her experience of having her children removed, court processes and accessing support once they've gone. As always, if you've experienced of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch with us through the Facebook or Twitter page, or you can email us at aandfpodcast@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Sammy, and I'm a birth mum to an 8-year-old girl, and I do a little bit of work with FRG, and I'm involved in some other stuff to do with birth parents and getting our voices heard, and I also attend a birth parents group via PACUK, and that's based in Leeds. As where I live, we don't have none, so I have to travel, which I like doing.
All right. So can you tell me a little bit about, you know, your story and how you kind of came to be in this, you know, be called a birth mum as opposed to just a mum?
Well, when my little girl was 3.5, she was removed and placed into the care system due to issues around domestic abuse within my relationship with her dad. We had an 18-month case where we had lots of court meetings and other things, and there was lots of things going on regarding how they was going to try and return her. Family was assessed. And above all, obviously, the courts made the decision that it was too unsafe to return her to my care. Then we spent another 9 months where obviously they did parallel planning to find adoptive parents for her, or an adoptive person if there was a single person, but they wanted mainly a family for her. And then it was roughly about 10 months after they'd got their full placement order, they matched my little girl to a family. And then obviously we went through the channels you go through for them to become approved and stuff like that. Obviously my contact was changed, it went to monthly. I still saw roughly 3 or 4 times before I had a goodbye contact. So my goodbye contact was February 2018. And then she was placed with them April 25th, 2018. And then turned 5 in the June of that year. And then obviously they waited, I think it was roughly around 10 months before they applied to adopt. And then obviously I tried to contest that, but obviously because she'd settled and things like that, obviously the judge decided that adoption was still the best thing for her. So although I disagreed, I didn't appeal that decision. Due to the fact of that, she'd been with them 10 months, she was settled, and then if I would have tried to appeal that, I was scared that then they said they didn't want to carry on to adopt her, so then she'd be left in limbo again. So that's how I become a birth mum. And I now get letter contact, which is one per year, and I get a letter from the adoptive parents, and I get a letter from a little girl too, which gives me lots of information, things she's been doing. And from my point of view, that's going really, really well. We have a really good, like, letterbox, could you call it a relationship? and that's both ways. It's both sided their way and my way, and I like what I get told. If there's anything that I want to know, they try to answer in the best possible way. Obviously, things are different in my life now to what I was back then. No longer in that position of being a victim of domestic abuse. And that's obviously how I've become involved with PAC, and I've done lots of work with them around stuff like that. And obviously, where I'm based, there's lots and lots of things here that can support women and men also, but in my case, just women, that have been a victim of that. So that's really helped me with seeing what it is, what it in, and obviously more made me see why my child was removed and the risks was there, and they weren't just that. I just thought that the one, because obviously you think differently, but now I think a lot differently to back then. And I know, obviously, that it wasn't the right thing for her, which I don't think it is for any child to be just snatched away and their whole, everything they've ever known to be just took away. But I know now that partly that was a better thing for her. Obviously, it wasn't nice for her to live in that situation where there was a possibility of things could become very risky, very unpredictable and stuff. Now I'm just sort of focusing on things that I'm doing myself and basically trying to get out there of that. Birth mums are not always what we're perceived to be, and that when it comes to things in a report, that they're not always true, or they're not as bad as they're made out to be. But I understand from a social worker's point of view that they have a job to do too, and obviously they weird things maybe in a way that would come across to me that, like, well, no, it didn't happen that way. But yeah, so my aim now for the future is to obviously try and change things for the better for other families, and also so that my girl knows that when she's older, I can show her all these things I've been doing, that I did try to change my life and try to change things for a better, for possibly if she ever did come back into my life when she's older. And also it's nice to have people listen to people like me for my experiences, then in order for them to work better with people in the future who are maybe in my position, or just them that are just in the position of being a birth mum, birth dad, parent, whichever. That's my goal for the future now, is to basically help others and make maybe adopters and future adopters look at making, like, birth parents part of that story and part of their journey. Because obviously we, if it weren't for us, they would be adopting that child, or them children if it's siblings. And just so that, like, the children know who we are and that they are loved and they are wanted, and that it's not that we chose other people before them and that life just was tough back then. And obviously, that's not the child's fault or anybody else's fault for that matter. That's just sometimes our life plans out, and sometimes it's just where you just can't stop what's going on, and it's just so uncontrolled. That's, you do what you think is best at that time. So I like the work that I do, because I'm given opportunities, as I'm given opportunity via this podcast to say some of my experiences, how I became a birth mum and things like that, and how I think it's better for other people to listen to my story, and then they know that they're not out there and they're not just all alone, and that there is plenty of people out there and that wouldn't judge them. So I understand it's very easy for people to be very judgmental, but then when there's people like me who are given opportunities to say how bad things was back then, but how good things are now, and how that'd be better for when my child's in a position where she can come and look for me, and obviously to do with Letterbox, they know that I'm always going to be there to answer, and it's always going to be a two-way thing, and that if they did ever want to contact me about contact or anything other than just one letter, they know that I'm very open for that.
Yeah.
And that just, I'm not a judgmental person. I understand that things, life, sometimes is not what you can do and you can control it. And I'm just glad that I'm given opportunities around the work that I do in order for my story to be out there.
I mean, I've seen, I think I first sort of got to know you a little bit, or know of you through your social media, you know, on Twitter, where you were really open and honest about, you know, the reasons for, you know, how your daughter being removed, and sort of where you found yourself. I mean, If I can ask some questions, because I'm sure people listening will have lots of questions, but I'll do my best to try and think about what they would might be. As you look back now at the Sami of sort of 5 years ago, 5+ years ago, what do you think about her? What would you think would have made a difference for her then?
If I'd have listened more to maybe the concerns that they had, and maybe just if I'd have seen myself then as a victim of domestic abuse, and obviously my girl's birth dad, he has mental health problems as well. So I think I maybe thought that everything that was going on was maybe just part of the way he was, and not that it was domestic abuse. And obviously, I'd obviously made different choices for definite. I did have the opportunity to move away from where I lived into like a safe house type thing.
Yeah.
But because he wasn't in the picture, I sort of declined that and said that I didn't want my child to live in a place like that, and said that where we are at the minute, it was safe and it could be made safer. And if I was supported differently and there was that more support there, instead of making me feel that I was being bullied and that everything was kind of my fault and that I asked for what happened and stuff like that, then things maybe would have been different. But mainly, I'd say the main thing I changed was obviously some of the choices I made, and it should have maybe left before I did, but didn't feel I could then. And I'd say mainly because I just didn't see myself as a victim of domestic abuse.
I mean, that's really common, isn't it, with domestic abuse, that people in the situation don't see it like that. But 5 years on, it's much clearer. I was going to ask as well, and it's something that we've picked up. I've done a few interviews with parents who've lost children, and one of the things they talk often about is the sort of what happened after their children were removed. And can I ask about, you know, what happened to you in those days and weeks after your children removed? Who was there, anyone who stepped in and supported you? What was there, anything there for you?
Not from the local authority, the one, no. The only person that was there for me was my mum. And like a couple of friends who I would say are close friends, but then some friends I had obviously did backstab and did report things that obviously I didn't think they would. So I'd say mainly it was my family, which was very difficult for them, because obviously when my child was removed, November 2016, obviously within a couple of days they asked me to put people's name forward to be assessed for her, which obviously was the family members that were supporting me. And obviously it took a really big strain on my relationship with my dad. It's only been in the last year that he started like talking to me again, and we're a lot closer. Nowhere near as close as we used to be. But we are getting there. So I'd say if it weren't for my family, I wouldn't like to say where I'd be right now, or maybe what could have happened then. I think all I thought about was just I need to keep my head above water so that I could see my daughter. And that's when they removed her. I didn't really, the only question they asked was, when can I see her next? And it obviously, I did sign a Section 20, but that's because I was told that if I didn't, she'd be placed in police protection. So I thought that meant she'd go to a police station. So I just went, right, give it here then. I don't want her in a place like that. Because he explained that they had a home for her to go to, what wasn't in the same local authority as I lived. So I thought at least then, and they said there was children there, so I thought at least then it was like a bit like a family home, and it was better than a police station. That's how it was explained to me. How I interpreted it is that she would go to a police station for 72 hours, and then if they'd not found anything by then, I was in a position to ask for my child back if they didn't have a court order. So obviously my family supported around that. But if it wouldn't have been for them, then like I say, I don't know. I think things would have planned a lot more different, and I really, really did struggle my mental health. Well, that I never knew. I never thought I'd be a person that had problems with my mental health, but just felt like they kind of made the abuse and the trauma I'd already suffered. I felt like the local authority made that worse, because obviously they took her, which made it more emotional for me. And it just felt like it feels like you get dumped, like you don't matter anymore. And obviously because your child's not in your care, it felt like to me that meant that then no matter what I did and no matter what I didn't do, and nothing would be good enough, because in my eyes back then, they'd got what they wanted, and that was my child, and my child away from me, and me in a very slim position of ever having my child return back to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine being in that circumstance and how you even tried to make sense of it, and because obviously then you're into complex legal situations, you've solicitors and things that you're probably not familiar with or totally new.
Definitely not familiar with. My whole life, I'd never had social services involve me as a child, so I knew people that had them, like some of my friends when I was at school and stuff, but obviously didn't. Then you don't know about them. It's just that you just think your friends have a social worker and that's because they need one. Obviously, when you're a child, you don't think like that. But so I didn't really know how it worked. At one point, I didn't even think I was in a position where they could remove her off me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was very difficult. It's quite hard to explain how you felt, because to be fair, I don't really know how I felt. All I know is that I felt empty and lost, and just felt like the world was really big, and I'm a small person anyhow, and I felt even smaller. And that no matter what I turned to, no matter what I spoke about, it just felt like I say, like nothing was good enough, and no one would ever be willing to listen to what I wanted and what I felt was best for my child. It just felt like they got what they wanted and I didn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Can I ask you maybe a little bit further along? So then the proceedings went through the process and it kind of came to its conclusion. Were you given the opportunity to meet the adoptive parents?
No. How it come about was, obviously it had been about 9 months before they'd match it to anyone. So I applied to the courts to revoke. That was accepted into the courts. At that court hearing, I was then told that she'd been matched 10 days previous to that, and no one had told me. So the judge said because there was nobody in a position to be reassessed, he would let them carry on with their parallel planning and to carry on with whatever they do for them to become approved and the work they do with them. And he just said that obviously I would be informed of everything that was happening around that, and when there was approved, I'd be informed and stuff. So that was that. We left the courts, and then about 2-3 days later, social workers got in touch with me and said that they'd been to panel and the panel had approved these people. So she said, obviously, because at that point the judge had not been confirmed that I couldn't have my revoke, so we went back to court and he said he wanted to see what evidence I was putting forward to say what the change in circumstances was and why I felt I should have this revoke. At that second hearing, I asked if I could meet the adopters, and the local authority's solicitor and my little girl's social worker point blankly said no, because in case their identity was known to me. And that was the answer I got.
All right. Yeah. So obviously the adoption went through, you know, and it sounds like you're quite a complicated legal case, but I mean, often legal stuff is complicated, you know, for people.
Obviously, from there it went on to obviously, and then obviously they adopt the thing, and then she was with them about 10 months and then they adopted her.
I mean, that sounds, you mentioned there that you had the opportunity that you could have appealed again, but you...
Yeah.
But you were kind of caught in this sort of this impossible situation.
Yeah. You're given the chance to obviously appeal, well, to basically to say whether you want to agree with the adoption. So obviously I said that I didn't consent.
Yeah.
Went to the courts, but then that's when I made the decision of that. I was in like a catch-22. Do I do I appeal? And then she'll always know that I did appeal and that I didn't just stop there because I'd been told no. But in our final court order, the judge did say, because I wasn't appealing, he did make it in the part of the order, it just say that the child, and then it gives a name, that she's very loved and that her parents fight it till the very end and they fought at every stage possible to have her returned. And I think that's what made my decision of that then. I didn't go back and then appeal it. But the main reason why I didn't appeal it is because obviously they produce a report to the courts from the adopters, and she was settled. She'd obviously started school again. So that would have been a second school she went to. And who knows, I could have appealed. And I might not have even won that appeal, and then she might have just been left dangling in the care system. And with her being 5, she was already classed as hard to place because of her age.
Mm.
So then, and it took them, I know they said to me that in one of the reports, they'd assessed 10 people for her, and these was the 11th people, and these was the people that they thought was best for her, and that she fitted in with like their family too. And I didn't want to jeopardise that. I thought then, no, she could just be left dangling in the care system. That still don't mean I'm going to get her back. And then she would have still had that stigma of being looked after. We'd still had to have the tears and everything when it was end of contact and stuff like that. And then I didn't want to then be in a position where she started refusing to come to contact with me. Because obviously I have friends that I know and people that I know of. That's happened with them once the child is not adopted, but they're left in long-term foster. Some children then start refusing to go and start getting all confused about whether the parents do love them and stuff. And I just didn't want that for her. Although she'd have still seen us, she'd have still known who her identity and everything was. Adoption just had, I don't mean this the way it says that I don't love her or anything, but adoption had more positives than long-term foster.
Mm.
She's in a place where she can call home because foster care is not home. She's got an adoptive mum and dad who love her and who care for her. She's happy. And obviously I know that by the letters and stuff I get. So I just thought, obviously I didn't want to jeopardise the fact of that she had a family. She had a, maybe they could give her opportunities that maybe possibly I couldn't. And then obviously if she'd have been returned to me, she'd have still would have had that stigma of being looked after. Then obviously would have had to juggle contact around her dad and stuff like that and everything, which then would have been very difficult. So being adopted possibly has made her, it's took that risk away, hasn't it?
It feels like a really brave decision, but heartbreaking as well. I mean, I'm aware that you made that decision, then what happens next for you? Is that just the end of it? Was it literally just like you fell off a cliff?
It literally is. That is just the end. That's when I think I'd prepared myself for the fact of that. I knew I would never get her back, but I did what I thought a mum should do. I tried to revoke, I tried to appeal, I tried to do everything in my possible powers to stop that adoption and to try and get her back home to me. But I think I'd prepared myself for the worst scenario, and I prepared myself for that. Once I'd got my head around the fact that she was in foster care, she wanted my care, and although there was planning on either return home to family, long-term foster, adoption was like the last choice, I think I kind of prepared myself then, because I knew she'd never come back to my care. I knew they'd never give her back, and I knew that no matter what I did and what I didn't do. And that's just from right at the beginning, and just sometimes the way their body language come across, maybe sometimes the way I come across. So although that was a really heartbreaking decision for me to make, I know at the end of it, I made the best decision for my daughter. And that's when you realise that's the end of it. And then you've got to sort of try and move on with your life, not forget her, which I'll never do. Think about her every day. But more just make my life better and come to terms with and process everything that's happened and get help around that, in order for then that I hope she does come and find me one day and I'm in a better place to have that in my life. And obviously all children, adults, because obviously most probably by then she will be an adult, She's going to have questions, and I want to be able to be in a position where I can answer them honestly.
Yeah. So I know that that's, you know, it's still a few years ago now, and you've sort of been involved in a lot of support groups, like peer support groups. And that seems to be something, I know that's something you're quite passionate about, and I've,
yeah,
we've spoke to people, and, you know, with kind of a community, yeah, of women that you're involved with. And so what do you do to help, and what help has that been for you?
I think what's helped me more is obviously having, obviously the support network I've got, and attending like groups with other people that are like me. And I think that supported me more is that they understand me. So if I was explaining something really significant or something really small, like maybe your child's favourite flower, or someone said, oh, my favourite flower is whatever, and that was the same as my child, I know if I started crying, they would understand why, and I wouldn't feel stupid. And I think it's because they're not judgmental.
Mm.
Or if some of them was judgmental, they keep that judgment to themselves, and they'd come across like, well, you didn't do this, Sammy, and you didn't do that, Sammy.
They've walked that path, haven't they?
Yeah, and they've given me that path to work on me and work on like my self-esteem. And I did two courses during the court process, and then I did another course after the court process. And all them three courses was around domestic violence. And I did one around mental health as well, to sort of like, maybe that helped me understand more that when I was with her dad, he had the issues he had, but then once she was taken, that then felt like that was my fault too, and that it was my fault that he had them problems, what he had. So the work I've done and the courses I've done and the support network I've got have made me realise that, unfortunately, I couldn't change him, and he couldn't change maybe part of how he was, which led then to it all being all unpredictable and everything, and obviously leading to our daughter being removed. But yeah, my support network I've got now, I'm in touch with lots of people, and social media has helped a real lot, mainly Twitter, because I've like met a lot of adopters on that, and some of them have been really supportive, and like a couple of them I've asked questions to. Like I asked one of them, what would happen to my daughter stuff she had at foster home? Would that go with her, or would that just be returned to me? And they said, no, they're her things, everything goes with her. And that like reassured me that things we'd got her on contact, or things I'd sent to her,
yeah,
like birthday presents and stuff like that, that reassured me. And then one of them said that reassured that all the two birthdays she had, no, one birthday she had in foster care, that them cards are part of her life story work, and that pictures and stuff she had of us all went with her. But yeah, it was a few adoptive parents that answered that question to me, and some of them, I've said, like, I reached out to some of them about what's nice to ask in a letter and what they like receiving and stuff like that. So the opportunities I've been given with the support network I've got have obviously led to me meeting people that I've previously adopted, and that some of them hold a lot of love for their families, and some of them obviously have different contact arrangements to me. So yeah. Now it is just about me and making my life better, which obviously now it is a lot better than what it was.
Yeah. Now, Sammy, you've been so honest, and you know your story is it's really thought provoking for anyone. You know, me as a social worker, me as an adoptive parent, it fills in gaps for us because you've lived it. It's, you know, it's not just words in a book. You know, you're able to articulate, yeah, some really difficult experiences and the impact on you of the system as well. So thank you so much for your time and energy. And I'm going to do a false ending now so you don't disappear. But thank you so much for giving me your time. and wish you well, and hopefully hear from you in the future as well.
Yeah, that's fine. And I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to obviously listen to my story, where it's just coming from me and not in like a group.
Yeah.
Because obviously most of the stuff I do is in a group. So that's, although most of the people that are in the groups I do have the same reason why their children was removed, most of them have been a victim of domestic abuse, but obviously everybody's story still has other things to add to it. And
yeah,
now things, just everybody's different. No one's life's the same, are they?
No, definitely not. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Recording stopped.